Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of The Art of Relating. I'm your host, Zach Schwartz, a psychologist out in Eugene, Oregon, and this is a series of shows on the concepts and skills for interacting or intervening in a more efficient and more positive manner. That's complicated. Remember, the most complicated thing you do in a day, I think, is interact with another human being. You're hooking up to 300 trillion cell biocomputers and trying to make sense of two different realities in a way that compensates for each other and makes a positive experience happen for both parties. So, lots of shows. The last three, this is episode 23, so starting with 21, we're extrapolating. Remember, this is the story of George and Rhonda, and session by session, or meeting by meeting, or item by item, this is a model of a priority of issues and how they can learn to get along better. Remember, if you have questions or comments, you can call me at Zach at or write me at kepw.org, and I'll be happy to answer your questions on the next show or respond back to you. Also, you can visit my website at dynamicinteractionskills.com. That's DynSkills, DynSkills.com. And there are books and workshops and podcasts of all these shows and further information available. So we started a couple of episodes ago with George and Rhonda trying to improve their relationship and improve their communication. And we started with values clarification. Are they equals? Do they have the right to safety? What do they want out of the relationship? The easy part, but establishing some base agreements about what they both believe in. And remember, one of the places that gets tricky is what we do, how we hear each other, how we feel in an interaction is all affected by a lot of things. George, for example, can believe in equal rights and that he and Rhonda are equals in all ways. But within him, there's a lot of ism input, what I call, from eons of misogyny or inequality or privilege, and there's always work to do to weed those things out of our interactions and get more in line with our values as equals. Anyway, we started as values clarification being the first topic. The second topic in our last episode, we moved to a pause button. Remember that in any interaction, there are simultaneous issues of ground, process, and content. Content, which I think is the third priority, is whatever we're talking about, the items, money, sex, parenting, activities, whatever we're talking about, that's content. At the same time, there's process. Process is how we interact. If I say point of order, I mean I want to stop the conversation about the content and talk about how we communicate, whose turn is it to speak, is it getting too hot or ungrounded to continue, are we validating each other, are we empathizing with each other. Those are all examples of process issues, have nothing to do with the content, it's about how we communicate. And then the highest priority, what comes first in all this, is what I call ground, or are we both grounded, centered, relaxed, and open enough to have a chance at having a positive interaction, always ground first. One couple I work with, I said, even if you're asking for the salt at the dinner table for now, always take a breath, put your feet on the ground, make contact, create the habit, because otherwise you won't use it when you're under stress. Create the habit of always putting ground first. And in an interaction, if someone is seems ungrounded, if you think you or your partner feel ungrounded, without justification and without argument, you can always pause. And last week we worked on developing a pause button. How do we stop the process? Do we have the right to space? Do we have the right to stop the process? Yes, we do. But every right carries an obligation. And the obligation of the right to space is return and resolve. You have to reconnect. You can't use your right to space to stay away from someone indefinitely or to close the interaction on the content. Remember, a content item between two people, between George and Rhonda in this case, is not settled or resolved or done until each of them thinks that it is. As long as one person wants to continue, then we haven't quite finished the communication about that issue, and we need to proceed. And remember, with communication and interaction, understanding the concepts and skills intellectually is the easiest part. Integrating them takes slowing down a tremendous amount how you interact and integrating these rules and concepts into how you interact takes a lot of practice. So always it's acceptable to stop and reground and then get back to interacting effectively. So let's suppose, and remember, sometimes it takes multiple weeks to get these things in place, that George and Rhonda have established compatible values, they're okay there, and that they care about each other, they want to try and improve the relationship. They have established a pause button and are even starting to practice that. They have a signal for taking a timeout. They know what starts that timeout. They know what completes that timeout. And that's in place, so they both feel confident that they can pause an interaction whenever they wish to and get that moment to reground and then reconnect. And remember that if you take a timeout, if George takes the timeout, I want both George and Rhonda to grant the space, then to ground themselves again, and we'll talk soon again about grounding, and then to clarify what they're feeling and what they're trying to say and make some plan for what they want to share when they get back. That's all the work that one must do while on a timeout. Ground, clarify, plan, and then come back to your partner. And when you come back, remember, it's the first question is, are you ready to continue? Do you feel grounded? Do you need more time? You have to establish ground in order to return to a healthy process, and you have to have a healthy process to work through any content in a mutually acceptable manner. So we come back from the timeout, we make sure we're grounded, and then we can continue. And George and Rhonda asked at the end of that second goal, which was to establish timeouts, how do I integrate these things? How do I remember to do it at the time? Well, the answer is homework and conditioning. And most people fall short of staying motivated to do the conditioning, to use these skills, and to integrate it into the habits of how they interact. So don't wait, I say. Individual homework, George or Rhonda, make a list of possible content issues. Imagine, use your guided fantasy or your imagination, how that conversation could go, how buttons get pushed, how we start to escalate, how we start to get ungrounded, and then visualize yourself. Feel that way, call time. Feel that way, call time. Call time means ground, clear, and plan. Call time means ground, clear, and plan. As I work through, imagine situations, do a bunch of repetitions, different situations, I'll start to integrate. I'll start to get the habit going of acting that way when we actually interact. So plenty of work to do. So now, the third issue between George and Rhonda, after we did values clarification and after we established a pause button, and they're working on that, is to contract for the respect of the right to an issue. Remember from earlier episodes, or newly presented now, the right to an issue is one of the five interactional rights in this program. And the right to an issue says that either person, George or Rhonda in this case, can put an agenda item up, have an item that they want to present, something unresolved, something they want to express, and have the right to have that issue dealt with in what I would describe as a reasonable amount of time. Now, that has to be contracted for, too. Because of the right to space, nobody is forced to talk at a given moment about an issue just because I want to talk about it. Rhonda is not forced to talk about an issue just because George wants to talk about it. She is obligated to deal with that issue eventually in a reasonable to each of them amount of time. If she says, for example, I don't want to talk about that right now, then George may safely say, well, set a time with me where we can talk about it, and I will leave you alone until then. But what we have to do is either talk about it or set a reasonable time to talk about it out of respect for the right to an issue. So now we ask that they both understand the concept. We ask George and Rhonda, invite them to contract for the use of that right in real time. So they make a signal. They say when someone says issue up, that's their signal that there's something they'd like to talk about, something unresolved, something they want to express, whatever. There's an item on the agenda. The partner then needs to respect the choices of either starting that conversation now or setting a time to. But let me say something first about getting rapport before sharing content. If Rhonda, say, is reading a novel and George comes in the room and says, item up, she might look up and say, what, or not even know that he's addressing her. So when I work with George and Rhonda, I said, if, in this example, George thinks of an issue he'd like to talk about, what I suggest he do is first ground and center and get your feet on the ground and calm down and come to the here and now and get yourself to some positive or functional workplace in your head. And if you practice enough all the time, that should only take a minute. I'm not asking you to take all day to do it, but just a moment to clear the board and get your feet on the ground and relax. Be positive. Then rapport before content. So he comes in the room and doesn't say item up. He comes in the room and says, Earth Taranda, do you read me? And in that may signal Rhonda to either earmark the book and turn toward George and say, yes, what's up? Or she may say, give me 1 minute to finish this page, whatever. But if you do that, you improve greatly the chance of starting on an even keel and having a mutual understanding. So George thinks of an issue. He gets grounded. He comes to where Rhonda is. He says, Earth to Rhonda. Rhonda says, give me 30 seconds. She takes that time, closes the book, turns toward George, says, okay, I'm here. And George then can say issue up, for which Rhonda has the choice of saying, yes, what's the issue, inviting it to start now, or saying, I need some time with my reading or other chores. Let's find a time to have this conversation about your item that we can both live with, and then we'll pick it up then. So suppose we've gotten that far, we shared values, we have a pause button, we have the right to an issue. In our example, George raised the issue. Rhonda said, give me a few seconds. They both got granted, and they both said, okay, let's begin. If somebody wants to wait, they can, but then we need to reset a time to pick up the conversation. So Rhonda then says to George, what's the question on the floor? Which is my way of helping them say, you put the item up there, define the content and process of that item. The content's whatever it's about, the monthly budget, the kids' boundaries we set on the kids, whatever. But the process, well, in all of communication, there are only four processes. There are a trillion kinds of content, could be about anything, but I want to establish what that is. And I want to establish my intended process in bringing this up. Again, there are only four possibilities, or a combination of the four. So am I venting? Well, that's the first process agenda possible. I just want to share something. I don't need to negotiate anything. I don't need Rhonda to listen or do anything. I just need her to listen and care about what I'm saying. Give me some empathy. Give me some validation. Give me some reflection. But I'm just sharing information, opinion, feeling, whatever. That's the first what I call process agenda. That's the first kind of dance we could be doing when I bring this item up. The second one, the second process agenda, is called requesting. I'm asking for something. George is asking something from Rhonda. She is free to answer any way she wants. There's no power involved. There's no necessary negotiation. I'm just asking, could you help me do X at this time? And she can answer any way she wishes. So that's two process agendas, and they're different. One is venting, just sharing, and the other is requesting, just asking. And there are two more. The third one, process agenda, is called negotiation. I'm raising an issue that affects both of us. We have to find a solution that we can both live with. And there's a whole process for that, which we'll get into as these episodes go on. But negotiation, very commonly what's involved in an issue being raised, is the third process. The fourth process is limit setting, boundary setting. You know, like cross this line and die. Not literally, but figuratively. So when George raises this issue, his right, he can be doing any one of or more of those four things. What kind of dance is this? So if he says, for example, it's about our weekend schedule and I'm just venting, sharing some feelings, not problem solving or negotiating anything. Or I have a request. Could you cover for me Saturday? I've got something I've got to do in the community. Or, for example. Or he could be negotiating something. Here's the question on the floor. We have to find some answer to that question that we can both live with and that, with reasonable efficiency and resource, gets the question answered. Or I'm setting a limit. I'm letting you know that I am, say, not going to tolerate X, or I won't do Y. And we'll talk more in a while about the elements of setting limits, because negotiation and limit setting, those two process agendas, require power. I can't do them if I have no power. So where does that power come from? What power do either George or Rhonda have in the relationship that allows them to negotiate or set limits? Because power, had and used in a positive way, are a necessary, I think, part of having a healthy relationship. So you see how not simple, how much work it takes to establish these things, and we're not nearly done. But George and Rhonda, making good progress, have done values clarification until they felt compatible in terms of their values and goals. And they've established a pause button in their process. And they understand that priorities of ground, process, and content when they interact. And they have developed a timeout contract based on the right to space and a little bit the right to an issue, so they know how to get apart and mutually are motivated to honor that. And they also know how to get back together and begin each interaction with, are you feeling grounded? Are you ready to continue? Do you need more space? And remember, they also got the right to an issue figured out, how they build an agenda. Commonly, one common complaint that George and Rhonda might have is that he won't talk to me, I can't get my issues dealt with, I feel disrespected or hurt or locked out. So part of the value of this right to an issue is you never have to feel like you can't get an issue dealt with or listened to or brought up, because all you have to say is issue up, and your partner has already, by contract, agreed to honor that. When he hears that, he's going to say, what are the two things? Either let's begin, what's your issue? Or let's set a time to talk about it that we can both live with. Either way, it will get dealt with, and so when they're ready to begin, Rhonda says, okay, we're talking, what's the question on the floor, George? And George has the obligation, as best he can, to give both the content and process of that item. Remember, the content's whatever it's about, and the process is whether it's an event or a request or a negotiation or a limit set. That way, Ron has some idea what to listen for and how to respond. Now, of course, there's variations. If George presents a content issue that then, after hearing it, Rhonda feels unresolved about, she has equally the right to keep that item on the agenda and say what's unresolved and maybe move it from event to a negotiation. That could happen in either direction anytime. But to bring us up to date, in our example, Rhonda says, what's the question on the floor? And George says, I want to renegotiate who does what chores around the house. Well, that's a pretty big one. But okay, it's a negotiation. It's about the chores. Fine, Rhonda says, let's begin. So perhaps Rhonda has fed back, is this the question on the floor, as you were trying to explain it? And George says, yeah, that's pretty close. That's what we're talking about. Let's negotiate how we do the chores. And Rhonda says, okay, what's the next step? And I call the next step exchanging worlds. We'd like to hear from each other. We'd like to understand each other's realities about how we share the chores. We'd like to empathize. We'd like to reflect. We'd like to validate. So plenty to talk about in this section. But the question is, how do we share each of our realities about this question in a way that enlightens both of us but doesn't cause any argument or escalate or ungroundedness? One of the secrets of that, and there's several pieces, is to stay away from, that is, say, slow down the process, offering solutions or arguing about who's right or what we should do about the chores. That's too fast. In this culture, we often jump from a question to an answer. But in other cultures, as I understand them, they spend more time analyzing the question understanding each other's realities about that question, and try not to offer a solution until all those prerequisite pieces, say, are understood. So how do we listen to, share caring, share respect, share validation, and understand each other fully before we can move to making a proposal on a given issue? So I believe it's important for George and Rhonda at this junction, as they begin to negotiate the weekend chores, that they slow down, that they don't jump to solutions, that they don't have who's right fight, that they can clearly understand each other. So a couple of sidetracks here. We say, do you both understand active listening, and do you have an active listening contract? That is to say, when George, in this example, it could go either way, describes this issue, Rhonda has a opportunity to either respond, which is say something back from her understanding or feelings about the issue, or to reflect, to feedback what she heard George say first to see if she understood him correctly. I usually recommend that, especially where there's been heat. People usually jump quickly into, oh, you say that, I say this, tit for tat, or who's right fight. And I don't want to do that if I can help it. I'm trying to listen with an open mind, understand George's world, I'm asking Rhonda to in this example, make sure he feels listened to and cared about and respected. And then it'll be her turn. There's no rush. She always has a turn, and that will happen in its own time. So I asked them to develop an active listening contract. Because, again, what I hear commonly is the second most common argument couples have, which is, you're not listening to me. You don't understand what I'm saying. So an active listening contract says, whenever you suspect that I haven't heard you or I don't understand, or whenever you really want to for any reason, you can ask for reflection. And I encourage, as in this example, George says this issue, that Rhonda reflect before responding so that she can say, let me see if I understand you correctly. Are you saying this? You're feeling this and thinking this about the weekend chores? And George has a chance to say yes or no. If he thinks that's an accurate reflection, he says, yeah, that's about it. And then it may become Rhonda's turn to respond. If he doesn't, then he gets to go again. Anyway, you can see how we're getting lots to do and lots to think about. More next time. We'll hear you in a week. Remember, write to me at zach@kepw.org or visit the website at dyinskills.com for more information, more interaction, more practice, which we can all use to create stronger and more successful relationships. Have a great week.